yesterday, where we left off, we were talking about the implications of the different answers in Tosfos. And again, it's a little bit of an awkward discussion because all of the answers in Tosfos seem to be dealing with rejected positions. So you could say there's no implications to any of them. They're just explaining the Gemara, telling us what doesn't work. The Gemara tells a story about the two brothers and one brother saying to another brother who's building a wall that your wall is blocking off my light. And the Gemara tells us that he gets rejected. So it doesn't matter what the substance of his position would be, it would seem. However, maybe it does matter because there are those who suggest that maybe the Gemara is specifically addressing brothers who split inheritance, but maybe neighbors have different rules. So maybe there is some validity to some of these claims, and therefore there is what to discuss about the different interpretations. So within that, just to quickly recap and take it further, so the different possibilities included that according to Rashi, the issue seemed to be that the brother with the hole, whose light was being blocked, was losing his light completely. And nonetheless, he had no defense because he didn't have a chazaka. And Tosfos, with both answers, was questioning that because how could it be that that's a possibility? Just because they didn't specifically negotiate that, it's possible to completely cut off somebody else's light. That would seem to be untenable as a possibility. How could it be that you could completely darken someone's property, especially in the pre-electric light era, when you would really leave them with no alternative except to be running a fire all day, and that's not so practical. So how could that be a possibility? The Rush, those who were here this morning for the Skills Chabur, we looked at the Rush in more depth. So the Rush has that language more pointedly, that a room without light is basically worthless. Although the Rush brings that up in the context of assuming that it must have been negotiated, it must have been established so that there'd be the possibility of light for that room, because we could all understand that without light there's no point. But the other two interpretations were the Rabbeinu Tam and the Ri, and we started talking about Rabbeinu Tam, that maybe it's not really about light, it's about having a line of sight from the window. And we discussed, could that be a basis to demand that you should have your view preserved? That if you have a residence that has a certain view, and your neighbor wants to build in a way that blocks your view, so could the view of Rabbeinu Tam, could the position of Rabbeinu Tam, be a basis to say that you should have your view protected? So many assume, as we started to say yesterday, many assume like the Maralbach. The Maralbach is quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, that basically there's a three-point argument to say that no, you can't protect your view, because, first of all, he just discusses in general, before addressing our Gemara specifically, that we have a concept of hezek re'iyah. We don't have hezek menias re'iyah. That, yes, there's damage that comes to you from somebody looking at you. We don't have damage that comes from somebody stopping you from looking. That's not an idea that we find. And if you want to look at our Gemara specifically as a source, so basically he has three objections. We may have mentioned two yesterday. Basically three objections. First of all, if you all want to premise the whole thing on Rabbeinu Tam, so, first of all, Rabbeinu Tam is a Das Yachid. So the question of do we paskin like him, or do we paskin like the Ri, or do we paskin like Rashi, which of the Rishonim do we paskin like, is itself a question. So to assume that Rabbeinu Tam is the dominant view here is already an assumption. So that's already one question. Second question, again, it's a rejected claim to begin with. So you'd have to premise it on saying, well, it's only rejected for brothers splitting an inheritance, but it would be a valid claim for neighbors. So he wasn't so into that either, and blah, blah. But most important as an abstract argument is that even if we follow Rabbeinu Tam. And even if Rabbeinu Tam could be preserved for regular neighbors, but he's not talking about a view in the sense of you like seeing things. He's talking about specifically access to his own property, to his own business interests. And in the rush, this is clear. And again, in the Skills Chabur, we spent some time comparing the presentation of the rush to that of Tosfos, Rabbeinu Tam in Tosfos and Rabbeinu Tam in the rush, and it's a little bit more extensive in Rabbeinu Tam in the rush, that it's specifically about your ability to see your own business interests. And it's in that sense that the Gemara on the next daf, when it talks about the brothers who split property, how they don't have chazaka on each other, here on the top of Zayin Amid Beis, on our daf here, that they don't have chazaka as ha'achin shechilku, the third line on the Amid Beis, ha'achin shechilku ein lehen lo derech zelzeh, v'lo chalona zelzeh, v'lo suwamo zelzeh, v'lo amasamayim zelzeh. So all these things, the connection between all of them is that they're issues, they're devices that are going to connect one thing to the next. So Rashi here translates lo chalonos as la arel stimos oro, that you can't complain about your light being cut off. But within the Rashi's presentation in Rabbeinu Tam, it's specifically about the linkage, about the connection the window would bring to your other interests, but you don't have such a claim. Okay, so that's the issue, the potential ability to supervise your interests, that's where maybe you could have had an argument, and even then, for the first two reasons, it's not going to float. So that was the view of the Marlbach, and again, it has some authority behind it, because quoted in Pesach Yitshuva and others. The Marsham was more open to that possibility, that your claim that you should be able to supervise your interests should be respected. And he notes that there is also a tshuva like that supporting that view in the appropriately named tshuva samabit. That the mabit, again, appropriately does respect the right that you would have to be able to see what your property interests are. So because he assumes, the Marsham, that there is a legitimate machlokus about this, that each position would be able to say kimli, which is a topic we've touched upon a little bit in the context of Dinim Amanos. And it's going to be very relevant to these issues because they are constantly disputed, and you could find, especially there are so many contemporary svarim detailing all of the positions that contemporary dayanim have taken on these issues, you could find a support for any position. So you're going to have a lot of kimli cases, meaning that you can argue that you follow the view of whoever thinks you're right. So it's going to give an advantage to the default position, the muchzak in each case. So that, if you work with that premise, so that might allow somebody to argue you can't build a wall that's blocking my view. But a wall that's already been built, it's going to be hard to make the case that you should take it down. So all of that is within working off of Rabbeinu Tam. But let's move over now to the Ri. So what about the Ri? Especially in our daf, Tosfos quotes the Ri last. Another thing we discussed during the skill session, that maybe that gives you the impression that the Ri is the dominant view here. So what's the Ri's position? That it is about light, and it's not about view, it's about light, but it's about more than average light. That this whole notion of an asplida, etc., we're talking about a certain kind of room that by its nature requires more light. And if that's the case, so should that be a different story? So yes, to completely darken the room, that we can't countenance. But what our Gemara is talking about is, describing the scenario this way especially, it's talking about a different kind of room that requires more light, and the taina that's not accepted in our Gemara, but maybe should be accepted elsewhere, or maybe should be accepted if there is a chazaka, is that I'm entitled to more light for this room. And when the Gemara talks about Durna, which sounds like it means a darkened room, so Tosfos says it means it's a relatively darkened room, but not a absolutely darkened room. Maybe?
So would this be the case of a storehouse where that if it's dark, the grains, like, go bad? Wasn't there something like that in...
Well, the Rashba mentioned that because of the Gemara in the second parak, right? The Rashba was saying that even though you're allowed to do what you want in your own property, so you can't do things that actively hurt the other property, and at the same time, you can also stop someone from doing something in his property that hurts you by your getting there first and establishing what your needs are. So when the person builds an otzer on the top floor, and that's going to impact on what the person on the bottom floor can do, that's something which is within his rights. It was in that context. So this idea that maybe there should be more space, more light allowed for different kinds of rooms, so does that have halachic ramifications? So here, there is what to talk about in general. So the notion of the separation to provide light, so what is the shir? So the Gemara says later that it's Dalet Amos. And Dalet Amos, according to a number of the Rishonim, such as the Rush and the Tshuva, it's just the Rashba rather, and the Tshuvas and Chelik Gimel that you saw, and Rebbeinu Yonah and others, they understand that Dalet Amos is the absolute shear. And that this is what Chazal understood as the measurement in order to prevent unwarranted darkening is Dalet Amos, and that's it across the board. And the Rashba even goes into the whole speech there. That kol shiurei chachamim kachu, right, that we find that chachamim have shiurim that are very precise, and that if you're on one side of the measurement, you're in, one side you're out, and that's just the way it is. A mikveh that has 40 saw is effective. If it has a little bit less than 40, so it's not effective. All shiurim work that way. So too here, we have a precise measurement. It's Dalet Amos, and that's what it is everywhere. So we don't differentiate. And that's what the poskim write also, that we don't say, well, if there's more windows, so then maybe there's more light coming in and we could allow less space. Or if there's fewer windows, so then maybe we should have to allow more space. We don't make a distinction based on how many windows there are, how big the windows are. It's Dalet Amos across the board. Hi.
What about how high the wall is?
Also, so the wall would be opposite the window. That's what would be creating the issue.
I'm saying if you have a very high wall, 4 feet might not make so much of a difference.
Because it's going to eventually...
There will be a very small range of time when there's sun's going to
be... Yeah. Yeah, we don't seem to find that as well. We do find a major discussion, and here is one of the issues where you'll find every possible opinion, whether there's a notion of covering up from above. So let's say if you want to build a balcony, and the balcony is going to extend out, and that's going to stop light from coming down. So there is an issue where you find every different shita. Some would say it's not an issue at all. Some would say it's completely an issue. Some would say it's not an issue if it's 4 amos going up. So that relates. So within that, so here, that's the general assumption that it's Dalet Amos across the board. However, there is the view of the Aguda. Noted, not the political reference, but this is one of the Rishonim. So the author of the Aguda maintains that you could say that based on the Ri, that it would come to the conclusion that there are some places that should be entitled to more, and that there are some areas that should have a need for more light, and that should be respected. Now, when I say he says this based on the Ri, that is where it seems to follow, I tried to give you the place where it'd be easiest to find the Agudah, because most of you don't have your own Agudahs. So the most accessible place was the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef has it as based on Rabbeinu Tam. So that's hard to see why this should flow from Rabbeinu Tam. Seems like it flows from the Ri specifically. And that's the way it is in the original. If you have the actual Agudah, it has the Ri. The Beis Yosef seems to have it as Rabbeinu Tam. And this is taken up by the Noda Behuda. The Noda Behuda, his Chuvis, you know, Rechaim in Mardura Tinyona, in Simon Tazayan, he has a Chuv about this, where he endorses the position of the Agudah. There were others who dismissed the position of the Agudah, said he was a Das Yachid. And the Noda Behuda wrote, no, he shouldn't be dismissed. He was a Kadmon, he was a Rishon, he was somebody whose opinions of stature. And we don't find others necessarily disputing it. And it's quoted in the Beis Yosef. So all of that means we should factor in the position of the Agudah as having significant weight. So in the context of that tshuva, he discusses this difference that Beis Yosef quotes it as coming from the view of Rabbeinu Tam, but that seems to be a Gersa issue, because it would seem to be more understandable that it's coming from the view of the Ri. Okay, so if that's the case, so where is this Beis Yosef? Right, so I asked you to look at the Beis Yosef. So where is the Beis Yosef? Is it in Choshen Mishpat? In Hilchos Hezekiah? Where was it? Anyone notice where it was when you looked it up? It actually was somewhere else. It was in Aruch Chaim, right? What was it doing in Aruch Chaim? So it's a detail that sometimes may not focus on. Because it's about shuls, right? So it was in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses. So it's interesting quirks where things turn up. So there he's commenting on the tour, where the tour is talking about how you have to respect the role of the shul as the largest building in town and the like. So in that context, the Beis Yosef quotes the Agudah that there is this view that not only should the shul be the highest building, but it also needs more light than stam a house. So therefore, you should distance a wall farther away from the windows of the shul, not just Dal and Amos. Now, how much? Okay, so the Knesset HaGedolah back in Choshen Mishpat writes that, okay, 8 Amos, twice as much, but not more than that. But still, it's a different number. Others write that it depends on how circumstances indicate. But they do endorse this view that a place like a shul, which has a greater light requirement, would have a higher standard. Now, following this logic, a number of contemporary poskim, including the Emek HaMishpat. You might recall that we looked at the Emek HaMishpat earlier, talking about his discussion of Hezek Shmi. I think that was the last time we mentioned that sefer. But he has a lot to say about Ar Masechta, because he has a big volume on Hilchos Shechinim. And he has a whole lot about this issue of windows. So he has many, many pages on issues related to what we're talking about today. And he and others, in discussing this topic, so he takes up the question of, what about in a contemporary setting where you have building codes in the city? And the building codes require more than Dalet Amos distance from windows to provide airspace. So his discussion of this referred to a real-life case where there were two Jewish people who were in a dispute about this. And the one who was blocking the other's light, the one who was only Dalet Amos away from the other's window, said, who cares about the building codes? You and I are from Jews. We follow the Shulchan Aruch. According to the Shulchan Aruch, it's Dalet Amos. So what are you telling me about the building codes? Dalet Amos is enough. So what would you respond to that? What do you think? Is he right?
What's the reason for the building codes?
That's how they evaluate what people look for in terms of their airspace, vision space.
Is that under Din Mechus Adina?
Okay, so that's one possible consideration. Din Mechus Adina. What else? Who's up first? Din Mechus of the hand raisings. Okay, Max?
Is there any space here, no pun intended, space in this conversation to mention what we discussed towards the beginning of the Masechta about like Minhag, Minhag HaMakom?
Minhag? Okay, that's the first half, right? First word of Masechta almost. So, perhaps, yeah.
Shmuel? I was going to say similarly, just that I think your assumption would be that you're going to follow what the locale is doing. So, Minhag, or, like, I don't think Chazak would be the right word, but just that you're, like, technically, but, like, you're assuming that what the rules around here, are, that's what you're buying into, I guess.
Okay. Al, same thing?
Similar. I think even if it's not Dina Nemechus Adina, that's actually what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's if that is the standard, it becomes kind of an implicit agreement.
Okay. So, essentially, he takes the approach that all of you were right, but you're still not right enough. Basically, all of these arguments make sense, that the aspect of Dina Malchus Adina should carry weight. It's interesting, parenthetically, you talk about Dina Malchus Adina, it's overall a discussion. First of all, what role that plays, this is really just a much larger discussion, but just to acknowledge it parenthetically. Overall, when you have Chosh and Mishpat between two Jews, so what role is there for Dina Malchus Adina in these things? So if Chosh and Mishpat already set down the policies, so then if the Dina Malchus Adina says something else, so then what need do you have for Shulchan Aruch? So that's a question which, in general, has been raised in the context of understanding Dina Malchus Adina. And it deserves a much longer discussion. But many understand that it does regulate the way that when you have a rule like this that's set up for the benefit of society, so then it does apply to everyone, Jews included. And there was a discussion going back 100 years ago when the big posek in America before Moshe Feinstein was Rav Henkin, Rav Yosef Elio Henkin. So there was a situation then where the Jewish landlords preferred to rent to Jewish tenants, but not for any noble reason, but they thought that by doing that, they didn't have to follow rent control laws, because they could say that they don't have to follow the Dina Malchus Adina when dealing with other Jews, and therefore they could charge as much as they want. So to that, Rav Henkin wrote that that's not true, that when you have these rules, these laws that are enacted, Latikun HaMedina, that are enacted for the good of society, so they apply to everyone equally and apply to the Jews also, even when dealing with each other. So therefore, that's a broader discussion about how Dina Malchus Adina works. And there is a good case to be made here, presumably in Eretz Yisrael also, even though that's a discussion too. I think that Tshuva was written, the Tshuva of the Emek HaMishpat was written in Eretz Yisrael, presumably it's true there also. So yes, Dina Malchus Adina, certainly there's what to talk about as a obligating factor here. And yes, the point about Minhag is certainly a good point as well, right? The opening theme in the Masechta, that Minhag is going to establish the understandings between people, and our whole discussion about why that is, all of that does also lead to the same kind of conclusion. But in his discussion, Emek HaMishpat wants to emphasize that, yes, but even without all that, that it's not just because of Minhag, and it's not just because of Dina Malchus Adina, but really it's more because of the Aguda, essentially, that what emerges from the Ri and the Aguda is that the Gemara was talking about an assumption of how people relate in their Talmudic times. But if the assumption has changed, so then that din should also change. And even according to the Rishonim who say Dalet Amos is an absolute, so that's within that premise. But when you're in a situation where there's a new understanding of what people expect from each other, so then the logic of the aguda would lead you to say that that should become the standard. So he thinks for that reason, maker adin, not just because of dina machus adina, not just because of minik, but because of the initial takana, that the initial understanding that you have to protect your neighbor's airspace that was originally formulated as Dalet Amos, the Dalet Amos is now adapted to whatever the building codes are, and he writes that there are a number of prominent Dayanim who have taken on that position as well. Hi.
So when he said, when the Magdavar says that it's those reasons and more, he's implying just like a methodological question. He's in, like, they need all of them. Again, right?
You don't really need all of them, because he's saying that it would be true that the minhag would create an interpersonal understanding, and independently, dina malchus dina probably also should apply. But he's saying that even without those, just this din that we're talking about, based on the logic of the aguda, that there are, that basically, just like a shul or a trachman is going to redefine the standard, so too now the building codes also make that the understanding. And that's within this din, there's a specific detail that doesn't need recourse to minhag because it's built into the system itself.
So he is saying, but so just a little bit more, because what I was understanding was that it's a matter of, like, it's an interpersonal between the both parties as to what's accepted. But here in this case, they both have different opinions of what's accepted. So it's a generalized acceptance.
Right. He's saying that it is built into the assumption is that that's what takes on the new Dalet Amos. That becomes the new standard. Shmuel.
If I remember correctly, it sounded like we were presenting, or the Aguda was presented as being like a Das Yachid, and like,
according to some, right?
So why is this like the Emek HaMishpat's like trump cards, or whatever you want to call it? Like, it would seem like the other answers would be stronger, considering that they're not.
Yeah.
They don't seem to be like alone.
Right, so that's the question. Now, again, the Lamaisa, we just thought it probably wouldn't matter anyway because of the other reason. But he's working with Nodi Behuda that doesn't think you should take the Aguda as a Das Yachid. There were some who said he was a Das Yachid, but the Nodi Behuda rejected that. And part of Nodi Behuda's argument was that the Beis Yosef quotes him, so once the Beis Yosef quotes him, and we don't have explicit arguments against him, so he thought that gave it more significant weight. So you can put all that together. Thought that that was something to consider. So now, here, if you take that path, so now could we revive, possibly, the discussion about the view? And so before, we were trying to see if we could protect somebody's view based on the Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam had brought up this issue of being able to see. And we saw all the complexities that came with supporting that. But what about taking this path and saying, not because of Rabbeinu Tam, but because of changing expectations? That should we say that, okay, Chazal, we're working within one set of expectations, but nowadays there are additional expectations that people have in their residences, and maybe the view should be included. And that's the opening premise. We'll talk about the conclusion. But Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva. It's in the Chelek Aleph, it's the tshuvas Menachas Asher, Simen Sadi Chaz, where that's how he begins the discussion. We'll get to what his conclusion is. It says that maybe nowadays, since people take these things much more seriously, and clearly people emphasize them when they buy a place, and when they sell a place, and when they set a price for a residence, the view is something that is emphasized greatly. So maybe that should constitute a different reality. And that in the time of the Gemara, okay, so people lived in very small houses that were close to each other, and no one ever thought of emphasizing the view that comes with a certain residence. But maybe nowadays, maybe that creates a different reality. And in between the view, which maybe might seem more superficial or less crucial, so what's also discussed by Poskim in between and up to Ariyom Hazeh is what about the claim that you're blocking off the rays of the sun, Karnei HaShemesh, as the Poskim discuss, and I need that. And I need that for climate, perhaps, but also I might need that for practical purposes. What kind of practical purposes might I need the rays of the sun for?
Bushes, trees,
crops.
Okay, but what else?
Seeing.
Well, seeing we've already discussed, but.
Sun,
well,
tanning.
Sorry?
Tanning.
Tanning, okay, you guys, that's probably a step beyond the whole view thing. But what some of the earlier Sfarim mentioned is, what if I have a laundry line that needs the sun? That's how I dry my laundry. And also, more recently, but extensively discussed in contemporary poskim, the dude. Right? What if I have a dude shemesh? Right, so if you have a heater that is powered by the sun. So do I have a claim against somebody who's blocking my access to sun? Or you could also talk about a solar-powered house, which you see less of an explicit discussion. But how much should that factor in? Hi.
Why would the solar-powered house be different than a dude?
It's not really different, but that's a part of it. The dude is certainly discussed in many Sfarim in that particular example. So you have the collate, you have the receptacle for the sun's rays, and I'm going to build something that's going to block it. It's going to affect my usage, like my neighbor's usage, of the dude. So what would you say about that? So you have any feelings about these shilas? How do you think they should be addressed? Based on what we've seen so far, based on what you think is just. Yeah?
I guess for in regards to the dude, that it would be, that's more of an expectation, I guess, for a house that, like, if that's what's needed to have hot water or whatever the case is, like, that's a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's more of a direct damage. Like, I don't have hot water now, so I can't shower, etc. I can't do, like, that is taking away from me and damaging me very directly based off your actions, which we said is a problem.
Okay.
Which may not be the case with some of the other things. But I guess clothing line also somewhat would be a necessity to dry out the clothing, I guess. But I see there's more of a claim for a dude shemesh is more of a necessity than some other things possibly.
Okay. Shmuel, what would you say?
Just, it would seem that there's a difference between, like, before, when we had these, like, situations that in this exact circumstance the rules might be different, as opposed to, like, a dude shemesh or whatever, where, like, the rule, it would always be that you need more room everywhere, and, like, that, like, the 4 hours, whatever the, it would just be, like, moot now, because, like, all of, like, it seems like the things that would come up, some of the things that we mentioned, would completely change the rules for everything, which seems to be maybe potentially a step further than what the Reed was saying.
So could you say it again? So it would completely change the rules for everything. So
it's just a step further than, like, there's one. It's one thing to say that in this specific situation, like with a room that needs more light or whatever, that, like, you
to go from 4 amos to 8 amos is one thing.
But when he's saying that, he's not saying in all situations. He's saying for this thing. But when some of the things we're bringing up, it sounds like it would affect every home.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't 4 amos. It's possible. It just seems like it could also sounds like it's a step further to say that. Not just in this situation, it's in all situations now because the reality has changed. And
but maybe in Achanami, maybe that could be. So these are issues which there are a lot of Sfarim that discuss these things in great detail. You can find long, long essays in some contemporary Sfarim. Again, the Tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss, certainly would recommend reading. It's Aleph Tzadi Ches and Menuchos Asher. Long essays about this in Emek HaMishpat and another Sfarim. And there are some varying conclusions, but just to discuss some of the Svaras and some of the positions, So to the extent that you completely neutralize a purpose of something, so some bring that up in the context of even Rashi, right? That the same way that a room that is completely dark, so that would seem to be valueless, or Tosfos' objection in Rashi. So too, if I have completely made a part of the house's functionality neutralized by what I'm doing, maybe that should be factored in. One of the points that Rav Asher mentions is that we should also presumably evaluate, like we find in a lot of these questions, the comparable costs to each party. So it's one thing to say, I am depriving you of, let's say, your dude usage, but maybe you might be able to switch to electric power, or you might be able to move the mechanism somewhere else. But what I am demanding of you by preserving my dude usage is that you can't build onto your house in a way that severely compromises the value you get out of your own house. So maybe the cost to you is more than the cost it is to me. So just because I will lose out, maybe that's not fair to say that you should lose out more. So how do you balance these things? This is, we've seen in general, a tradition of Psak that does give some consideration to the varying impacts on the parties here. And therefore, that should also probably be factored in here. And he also goes into this question of Nof, of view, and how maybe once upon a time, this is not something anybody spoke about, and we certainly don't find in the Gemara or the earlier Svarim that this was a focus. But now, clearly, it's so much of a bigger detail. So maybe that should be given more consideration. And here also, we could bring in the issue raised by Thomas Sowell and others, and I sent around the essay if you had a chance to look at it, that essentially you could say, yes, people do value it, but the question is, what are they valuing? So yes, the price is sometimes reflective of the view, but you didn't pay that price from your neighbor to your neighbor. You paid that price to the original seller. And what were you buying? You were buying an opportunity. You weren't buying a guarantee. So if you really wanted to guarantee, maybe we should say yes, that that's a part of how we assess these things. And it was priced based on what it is now, but it was never guaranteed that it would be like that forever, and it wasn't priced to that. And especially that it wasn't sold to you by your neighbor anyway, to make him responsible to protect that. Even though it is something that people value, it is harder to impose that on the neighbor. And when it comes to a situation where what your neighbor is doing reduces the value of your house because of the view or the light, so as many of the posts can point out, it's hard also to hold him responsible for that, because that is a grumma, right? It's not a direct hezek. It is indirect that you're causing the value to go down. Several years ago, we learned Bava Kamma, and there's actually a fascinating discussion to be had in Bava Kamma in general, and it's this week's Parsha, so maybe it's a little bit of a third Aliyah topic. Maybe we can squeeze it in, but it's a fascinating question in general. The Chiyuv for Nezikin. The Chiyuv for Nezikin come from the fact that you damage somebody's property or the fact that you lower the value of their property? Or both or either. So, for example, some of the posts can talk about an interesting question. Let's say somebody has valuable stamps. He has the last two stamps of a certain valuable type. And I destroy one of them. But because I destroyed that one, the other one that he has doubles in value. So now he has the same value that he had before. So how does that factor in? So are we looking at the value, or are we looking at the object? etc. It's an interesting discussion. So here, the fact that maybe by blocking off the view, you're making this person's value go down, but that's a grumma. And that even though when it comes to grumma, we do find that it's asur b'day shamayim, and there's a chiyuv that's asur, and there's a chiyuv b'day shamayim, and should be able to stop you from grumma b'nezikim. But all of that, as the poskim emphasize, that's where I am indirectly actually damaging you. But here, I'm just working with my own property, and indirectly, it has a non-tangible effect on you. It's hard to say that that's subject to the rules of grumma b'nezikim. So it's difficult to really hold the neighbor responsible for that, even l'chachila. But what does the poskim do emphasize? And so at least one sefer that used the phrase kachi darkei shel Torah, that ideally the neighbors would try to work it out, try to say, okay, how can I build what I want on my property without impacting on you more than necessary? So that's the whole spirit here. We're sharing the space, and I want to use my property, and you don't want to lose the value of your property. So ideally, if we could talk about it and figure out how we could both have some aspect of what we want, that would be the ideal. Hi.
I'm a little confused on the grumma point.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I don't see why it's considered less than grumma or not direct. Meaning, I know this is blowing it to further proportion, but let's just say someone decided, I want to build a nuclear plant on my, and now your house is inhabitable. We would say that would be, I would assume that would be more than, that'd be problematic.
Yeah.
So why, meaning, it's not, they're not, why are they qualitatively?
Because you're not actually hurting your house, is that your house had a certain advantage to it, and now it doesn't have that advantage, and the advantage was not actually a part of the house. The advantage was really a part of my house that you were benefiting from. So it's just a couple of steps removed. It's a lack of a positive, and a positive that was never really inherent in the house.
But isn't it, it's affecting its monetary value?
Yeah, but that monetary value is all coming from other people's details. So it's just so many steps removed. You know, it's not like I actually broke your property or even did something that caused your property to get broken indirectly. So it's hard to say, you know, just like it. In general, a lot of things that happen in the world will impact the prices of things. And to say that I can't do any of them if they end up having a negative impact on your values, like I can't also enter the marketplace, or I can't, you know, build other opportunities for people, it's a pretty limiting perspective. So here a person is just functioning within his own property. And indirectly it ends up that his neighbor now, his purchase price is going to go down. But to hold him responsible for that is difficult. So one of the other distinctions that you find in the poskim invoking in this context is probably also a big difference between what happens in a neutral public space and what happens specifically in one's own space. That in one's own space, one probably has more rights to use it as he sees fit. While if somebody was going to put up something in a neutral middle space, but that was going to end up hurting the neighbor, then there's more grounds to limit what he was doing. Rav Asher also ends off his tshuva making a few extra points. He says that because there's so many subjective variables here, and it is hard to really come with an absolute conclusion, that it would be good, he says, if all the Batei Din and Eretz Yisrael would get together and decide some principles and decide some klalim, what should be the policies for everyone, because life has changed and there are different concerns and kvedas nowadays. But because they're not set out clearly in the Gemara or the earlier sources, it's hard to hold people responsible for them. So halavai, we could all get together and establish some clear understandings. That would probably help. And he then also notes that if you have a shared building, if you have different residences within a building, then he thinks there's an even greater understanding when people go into a shared building, that there's a certain consideration people have for what impacts their neighbors, and that there's greater latitude to expect that each neighbor is providing whatever it is, a certain amount of space within his activities, so that his neighbor can have the functionality that is expected of each resident. So when there are neighbors in different buildings, then that's already further removed, but neighbors in one building, so then there's a greater understanding that that's the case, and that could also be brought into the whole story. Okay, so I'll just add one other note about this whole issue, to go back to the initial point of the question of whether this is because there is a chazaka or there are assumptions otherwise. So what's lurking in the background here, and what's an important idea to keep in mind as we see other sugyas that are similar, and later on we get to the second parak. So you see, according to Rashi, let's say, that we're only talking about a situation where there is a chazaka and there's an established right. So these issues are basically of a type of gezel, that if I have a chazaka, then I have the ability to see through my window and have light and have air coming in, and you close it off against the chazaka, so that's a kind of gezel. You're taking away the property that is mine. If you say, like Tosfos, both the opinions in Tosfos, that there's a certain premise where you don't even need that much, where if you're going to be darkening somebody's space completely, so then that's a problem already. So it sounds like that's an issue of mazik. There's some kind of mazik there, that even though there's no actual physical damage and there's no established monetary right, and what about the Rashba's point that you should be able to do what you want in your own property? It sounds like there is a premise in the nature of neighborhood, neighbor-hood, neighbor-kite, that there is a expectation of certain benefits just by being a neighbor, and that to impinge on that is some type of a mazik. And that chakira in general, that question is going to be relevant as we see some other details, and especially keep in mind for a little while down the line when we see the second parak, where those issues are going to be more front and center. Okay, makes sense? Work more or less? Just to quickly recap, so we spoke about whether the position of Reina Tam could give you a basis to defend your view, and we saw different issues with that, and it was hard to come to that conclusion, although there was, at the end of the day, somewhat of a machlokas achronim if it was about seeing your business interests, that gave room for a kimli. And then we went to the view of the Ri, which was saying there should be a greater distance and more light allowed for bigger spaces that are defined by a need for greater space. And that's, he said, in explaining our Gemara, but the position of the Aguda was to apply that practically to a place like a shul, and to assume that that was the case, and the Beis Yosef brings that, and because of that, the Noda Behuda says we should take it seriously, it was a kadmon, and the Beis Yosef writes it, Beis Yosef quotes it. So then the question is, does that also open the door, open the window, for, pun intended, for a more expansive understanding of what these rights include? So we saw that the Emek HaMishpat thought that, and he's other down into like this also, that all municipal regulations about space should be binding, not just because of Menig and not just because Dina Machusadina, but because of this kind of logic, that this is now the understanding of what people expect in these settings. And then we went from there to reopen the issue of view, so that maybe if people expect a view nowadays, maybe that also becomes a new concern that should be respected. That was the opening premise, if not the conclusion, of the tshuva of Rav Asher Weiss and the tshuva Simcha Sasher. And it was also relevant to a lot of other things, such as the rays of the sun for laundry purposes, for the Dud Shemesh, things like that. And we saw that Poskim had many different stances on this, but some of the considerations were, what if it completely negates the purpose of part of your house? Is that something to worry about more? What if it's something where the imposition on the builder will be more than the imposition on the neighbor? So maybe that should be factored in. It makes a difference whether it's something happening in a neutral space or something happening specifically in the property of the builder. All of those are factors. We also saw that the Rav Asher's suggestion was that maybe we should need to get together all about the din and make new understandings, because that seems to be a big gray area, b'zman hazeh, and that needs to be defined. And he also drew this distinction between a shared building, where I thought there is more of an understanding that there are considerations given to those who share the building, which is even more so than those who are simply neighbors. And related to that point, the whole question of, is there basically, which just goes back to the opening point of this sugya, is there a premise of an expectation that neighbors have certain rights and that they should be respected even when they're not about hurting each other, but they're about just providing space for functionality? So it sounds like from Rashi that not necessarily, that the issue here is because there is an established chazaka and that violating that is some kind of gezel. But the two answers in Tosfos, which take it as a given that there is some basic minimal space that has to be given, so it sounds like there's some kind of a mazik nature to violating that, because there is a basic hanacha that there is some kind of consideration given for neighbors in Hilchos Shcheinim, and that's a topic that will come up again and again, as God willing, we will see in the future. Okay, we will. And a lot of excitement coming up in Parshas Mishpatim.